Introduce yourself.
I am Craig Evans. How do I introduce myself? I'm a tater.
And you're also in the Rock and Roll Jubilee.
We're in the Rock and Roll Jubilee.
Right, right. And so when did you first meet Jim Bourque?
I met Jim somewhere, I was just trying to think, somewhere around the year 2000, I think. We had the Burnt Taters, which was the first version of our band, started in 1997 as a duo with myself and Brad Tucker. George Garrett came in, I think, later that year as a drummer and sound man. And after a couple of years, I think by the time our second album had come out, which was right around 2000, we were starting to pull in extra people for shows. Mm-hmm. Chris Fuller came in, played mandolin for a year or so. And Jim, I had met, I was trying to think of this too. I believe Jim was playing with Janet Martin at the time,
yeah.
But I met him. And you know, we got along immediately, as does pretty much everyone who met Jim.
Right, right.
He came in. It was probably a situation where Chris Fuller couldn't play, and mm-hmm. so Jim stepped in, and you know, he fit like a glove right there.
What were your initial thoughts when you first met him, encountered him?
Well, he's just, you know, as anybody who has, you know, spent 5 minutes around him knows. I mean, he's got a larger than life, you know, personality. I mean, that personality is still here today,
yeah.
You know, even though, you know, Jim has gone to greener pastures.
Yeah, but, I feel like I could just bump into him,
yeah,
in the hallway right outside.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that's great. You know, I've had this similar discussion with a number of people last night. We had the celebration for him. And as sad as I am, along with everybody, you know, to lose him, you know, physically here, all of the stuff that he brought to, you know, our friendships and the music and obviously, you know, things like Virginia Voice and stuff, that's all still here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything, if you want to say it, like everything really good that he did is all still here.
Right.
You know, that doesn't go away.
Yeah.
And that's honestly that's how I like to think about it.
How are we going to fill the hole though? There's not too many people like Jim Bourque.
I don't think you do. I don't think you fill the hole. I think, you know, new if you will, new holes open up. You know, mm-hmm. new opportunities open up.
Yeah.
People come along, and you know, and they leave their own footprints. You know, in different places. We had the Taters guitar player Greg Morris sit in as a very last minute contribution for the Jubilee.
Right.
We were ready to when Jim was diagnosed, which was early January. The rest of us were pretty much ready to go ahead and cancel the show,
mm-hmm.
but Jim was adamant that he did not want to cancel, so he asked us to bring Greg in. Initially, Jim was thinking like he's going to be getting tired,
mm-hmm.
and probably couldn't do the full 2.5 hour show.
Yeah.
So he was going to have Greg come in as like a backup guitar player. But obviously as things progressed,
yeah.
You know, Jim, you know.
What's something that most people didn't know about Jim? Can you think of anything that we've talked about? What a great collaborator he was, fundraiser he was what a funny guy he was,
mm-hmm.
Wonderful musician. But what's maybe something that we don't know?
Well, I don't know about personality-wise, because I expect most people have addressed a lot of that stuff. But I don't know if anybody has mentioned the Super Sugar Beats, but Jim was one of the few people I've met, honestly, in my adult life. I can name the others on, like, you know, well, I can pull them on the fingers of one hand, who actually loved bubblegum music.
Yeah, yeah.
And he and I had, you know, had an affinity for that. I mean, we knew that, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him for, you know, 20 plus years. And we would have discussions about this stuff while all of our other musician friends would be standing there, you know, trying to hold their lunch in or something. You know, they didn't.
Yeah.
Really? You like that? You'd play that song on purpose?
Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Yeah,
I had
one player come to one of the Super Sugar Beats things and said, yeah, it was good, but I don't understand why anybody would want to play that.
Right.
And Jim just loved the stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, as do I.
How can we remember Jim best? How can we pay tribute as a community to Jim? What would be the proper thing?
Well, I mean, I guess the two areas that I know him from, obviously I know him from music, and you know, he was certainly besides being a great player, he was certainly a great supporter of live music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a big cause for all of us in the community, because, right. You know, as each year goes by, it always feels like fewer and fewer people go out to see live music.
Yeah.
But that's where you really would have seen Jim shine musically. He's on records. He's on one of our albums. He's actually on two of our albums.
Yeah. Yeah.
BJ was just in here, so
he's on
BJ's album, you know, so he's all over the place on that stuff, Billy Ray Hadley.
But Crumb Daddy Disco.
Crumb Daddy Disco, absolutely. But I think really where Jim, you know, really shone was in a live performance.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, you know, you'll have a hard time getting in to see one of his live performances right now, although I bet he's playing pretty well. I'm sure he would, you know, he would still be, you know, advocating for people to go out and see what music is out there, you
right.
know, because it's just, there's so much, you know, there's so much joy being kind of generated and shared in
yeah.
in that community. I mean, most everybody, certainly, you know, people of my age,
mm-hmm. generation.
I won't say what that is, but you know, we are we're doing it because we love it,
mm-hmm.
you know. Anybody that's with very few exceptions, if you're over 20 and you're doing this, you're getting into this to make money, you're in the wrong business.
Yeah. I don't know how to put this, but I know so many veteran musicians who seem to stop listening to music,
mm-hmm.
who stop keeping up with music, stop looking outwards to find new music.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim was not one of those people, and I thought that was really special.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, he was constantly finding out about stuff. He was obviously involved with the folk festival,
mm-hmm.
I don't know specifically what his role in that was. Whether he was,
oh, it was major
involved in picking the acts. Okay, because I mean, he would often, you know, come back from those and say, "Oh, you got to hear these guys. You got to hear this." Or, you know, for people that didn't go out and get the recording of these guys. You
mm-hmm.
know, listen to what they did.
Yeah, but also,
and he was always discovering. And this is where he and I really clicked a lot. He would constantly be discovering older things that we had never heard of. There's a Facebook group that he's part of. It's called No Hipsters Allowed, I think
is the name of it. Right.
And, you know, they will often post like just painfully obscure things that are
great,
out there.
But frequently
but
great
stuff. Yeah. Oh, I've thought many times that if nothing new got recorded starting today, there's no way I could possibly hear all the great stuff that I've never heard yet.
Yeah, right.
It's all out there. It's just, you know, with radio and, you know, media empires being what they are, you know, you're not going to find it on, you know, on one of the
right.
you know, the big stations. You know, mm-hmm. you're going to have to go out and find other.
You have to do some work.
Yeah. And, you know, Jim would, you know, he loved discovering that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know he liked promoting it too, but I think, you know, he promoted it because he loved the discovery.
Yeah.
He loved the process of that. He and I would do that with the bubblegum stuff. We would constantly be finding things that, you know,
mm-hmm.
again, we might be the only two people
yeah.
that were excited about it, but he loved it.
How much of, I mean, this tragedy, how much of this has given you more insight into Jim? Like when you were playing with him, did you know about all the stuff that he was doing? How he kind of turned around Virginia Voice?
I did. Well, I work for Department for Aging and Rehabilitative Services.
Okay.
So I work on, like, I do a lot of work with Department for Blind and Vision Impaired,
mm-hmm.
right across the parking lot.
Okay.
That's my day job.
Right. So you were aware.
Yeah. So I was very aware of Jim, especially once he moved out of the I mean, I knew he had been publisher for Style, and I knew him at Times Dispatch from work that he worked there, but I wasn't that aware of his day-to-day stuff. But once he got into the Partnership for Families,
yes,
and Virginia Voice and this type of stuff, I mean, I was much more aware. I was over here several times. He would tour me around.
Mm-hmm.
We did a couple of events, like as a Taters duo for Virginia Voice.
Uh-huh.
Jim would pull us in to do those kind of things.
Right.
So, you know, that aspect of him, I was fairly familiar with.
Yeah. And speak to that too. If you were in Jim's orbit and he thought you could contribute, he was going to make sure you contributed.
Yeah.
I mean, he would hound me down to help him do stuff.
Yeah.
And it was stuff that later I was grateful to have been a part of. Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, on one hand, you know, you'd say, well, he wasn't afraid to, you know, call on his friends, you know, to use their talents or gifts or whatever. But you really didn't feel like you were being used for something.
Right.
And especially, you know, those of us in the, you know, various arts kind of communities probably know what the opposite of that feels like. You know, mm-hmm. we know what people are, you know, like, well, come on out, you know, we'll do this. It'll be good exposure for you.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that type
right.
of thing. You know, Jim would, you know, he would make sure that, you know, if nothing else, you know, we got, like, let's say recognition or something for being there. And he did it because, and I think he would often ask people that he knew would be behind, you know, what it was that he was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What haven't we talked about? Anything else you'd like to add to the conversation?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I just, you know, he's been, in one way or another, he's been part of almost everything I've done musically, certainly in for the last 20 years. He was been in and out of the Taters. Our very first television performance was his first performance with us.
Oh, wow.
He came in. We had a thing on, I think it was WCVE. They had a thing called the Music Scene,
mm-hmm.
and they would record live shows at Canal Club.
Yeah.
And that's the first show I remember Jim being on.
Wow.
So he had to, like, learn a couple songs and, you know, get down, and of course he nailed it,
uh-huh.
you know, getting up there. But, yeah, he was part of the Taters. The Sugar Beats, he's obviously, you know, one of the shining lights of the Rock and Roll Jubilee. I mean, you know, he was, when George Garrett started putting that together, I think myself and Jim were the first two people that
right.
he contacted.
Will that continue even after Jim passed?
That's been a discussion, and I think none of us are really ready to have the discussion yet. I know that if Jim were here physically, he would say, go ahead and keep doing it, because that's Jim.
Yeah.
He was not, you know, as much of a, and I don't think he'd mind me saying it, as much of a ham as he might be sometime, you mm-hmm. know, on stage. He was never, like, up there being about Jim. You know, he was about the whole thing. And he would very much, you know, he would very much say, you know, like, if you guys can keep doing it or keep doing something like this,
mm-hmm.
'cause he knew how much, you know, how much the people that came to it just loved, you know, being there. Mm-hmm. You and I were talking earlier, and a lot of the audience for that particular, for the Jubilee, are not a demographic that tends to be, you know, going out to clubs and bars a lot in the evenings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is one of the places that they would see live music. And they were just, you know, overjoyed, you know, to hear some of this stuff and to watch, you know, people like Jim, you know, up there playing and having so much energy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that if we keep going in some version of that, it'll be because of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be kind of spurred on by, you know, what Jim was part of creating. And it'll be because of the result of it, what it brings to people.
Yeah. Thanks, Craig.
Hey, thank you for having me.